Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the program. Joining us in the second segment of today's program will be Ohio Congressman and candidate for the Democratic nomination for President of the United States, Dennis Kucinich. I can assure you that's going to be an interesting interview. Please stick around for that. Congressman Kucinich will be appearing in the area here in both Grass Valley and Sacramento on Monday, and we'll be telling you more about that. I think you should join me in coming out to California State University at Sacramento at 7 o'clock to hear the congressman speak. And there will be a town hall meeting at the Varsity Theater in Davis from 4 to 6 p.m. on Monday, May 26th with Congressman Kucinich. I understand the tickets for the event are $5 and will be on sale at Armadillo Records in Davis. We've been critical of the media on this program as we've tended to take an ever more progressive stance, as I think is very much needed in contemporary America. We need to address this issue of what happened to Private Jessica Lynch in Iraq. It has come out this past weekend that the story, which was so prominently displayed in the news media in early April about the rescue of Private Lynch, was in large part a staged event. If you'd been reading Newsweek in early April, you would have seen Private Lynch's face on the cover, and the dramatic story told of how this, in the first reported liberation of an American POW from enemy territory since World War II, Lynch was snatched from behind enemy lines by special ops. The Newsweek article states that deserving of a share of plaudits included the 1,000 or so Navy SEALs, Army Rangers, Marines, and Air Force flyers who carried out the raid, CIA spies, and an Iraqi man named Mohammed. You remember his story, the lawyer who said she was being slapped, she was being mistreated, she was being beaten up, who felt he had to go to the authorities. By April 16th, readers in Canada or the UK could have read in the Toronto Star or the London Times that there were great doubts about this incident. Authorities there, doctors at the hospital and others, told the story of special forces coming in by helicopter and tank to tape and handcuff doctors and patients, one of whom was paralyzed and on intravenous drip, to various chairs as they rampaged through the wards searching for Lynch. It turns out she was given good care under the circumstances, and that rather than being tortured with orange juice and crackers, that the doctors had gone out to try and obtain orange juice, her favored drink for her. The hospital staff had even donated blood so that she could have a transfusion. The doctors, in fact, had hidden Lynch from various Ba'ath Party authorities who wanted to take her back to Baghdad. At one point, the doctors had her in an ambulance and they tried to drive her to the American lines. The ambulance, unfortunately, was turned back by American gunfire. The Rambo-like PR bonanza that came out of this incident was rather welcome for the military, which at that time was facing a lot of criticism for evidently launching the Iraq invasion with what many military authorities felt were insufficient forces. On Sunday, the BBC show Correspondence televised a challenge to the official version of what happened to Private Lynch. The BBC report had previously aired in The Guardian, alleges that American rescuers did not come under fire, as military spokesmen said, and that they knew beforehand they would face no resistance. The assault was filmed by the U.S. military using night vision cameras. However, the British government, their media advisor Simon Wren, wrote a confidential five-page letter to his superiors in London describing the American presentation of the Lynch rescue as an embarrassment. He was also critical of American journalists, saying they failed to put American military briefers under pressure. I think as we follow what's going on in Iraq, the Middle East, and really just about anywhere, we need to keep in mind that sometimes the information we're being given has some flaws. Let's put it that way. Reuters News Service, May 19th, 2003. Baghdad. Saddam Hussein is hiding in Iraq with a small group, probably including his sons, and issuing orders to trusted supporters as he plots a return to power, according to former Iraqi generals returned from exile. The generals, who were in exile for years and now play a key role in working with U.S. forces to purge the Iraqi public service and security apparatus of Saddam diehards, said the deposed president has ordered a name change for the Ba'ath Party, claiming it's changed its name to Auda, meaning return. In conjunction with that, I would like to refer you to the Seymour Hersh article in The New Yorker, May 12, 2003, titled Selective Intelligence, in which Hersh describes how the Pentagon's Office of Special Plans has chosen not to rely on traditional intelligence gathering, but rather has relied heavily on the Iraqi National Congress, or INC, the exile group headed by Ahmed Chalabi, the man that Richard Perle in the Pentagon and others from the Defense Policy Board want to install as the new Iraqi president. Well, you know, when they say that Saddam's alive, and when they say a lot of things, they have a stake in what is being accepted. In the article, Hersh mentions how Dr. Kidhir Hamza, an Iraqi nuclear scientist who defected in 1994, settled in the U.S. with the help of the INC and has been a highly vocal witness concerning the Iraqis' alleged nuclear ambitions. However, in 1995, General Hussein Kamel, who was in charge of Iraqi's weapons program, defected to Jordan with his brother, Colonel Saddam Kamel. These guys apparently were both son-in-laws of Saddam Hussein, who unfortunately convinced them to go back into Iraq, where they were promptly assassinated. But while they were in the hands of the West in Jordan, they were debriefed. Kamel told the UN interviewers that Dr. Hamza, who's concerning himself with the Iraqis' alleged nuclear ambitions, was a, quote, professional liar, unquote. He worked with us but was useless and always looking for promotions. He consulted with me but could never deliver anything. He was even interrogated by a team before he left and was allowed to go. In 1998, evidently Hamza, in exile, went to a publisher with a proposal for a book tentatively entitled Fizzle, Iraq and the Atomic Bomb, which described how Iraq had failed in its quest for a nuclear device. There were no takers. So, afterward, Hamza publishes Saddam's Bomb Maker, a vivid account claiming that by 1991, when the Gulf War began, Iraq was far closer than been known to the production of a nuclear weapon. This apparently is the sort of individual we've been relying upon in our estimates that Saddam was close to having weapons of mass destruction. On April 26th, according to the Times, Hamza has returned to Iraq as a member of a group of exiles designated by the Pentagon to help rebuild the country's infrastructure. He is to be responsible for atomic energy. Yes, weapons of mass destruction. Remember those? Some unfortunate headlines which have been out on the web and on MSNBC and elsewhere last week reveal that the fact that no weapons of mass destruction have been found appear to be no political problem for George W. Bush. Democrats are reluctant to challenge Bush on any aspect of the successful war, and polls show Americans are unconcerned about weapons discoveries or the lack thereof. Analysis by Dana Milbank and Jim Vandehay for The Washington Post noted that disarming Saddam Hussein of his weapons of mass destruction was the main justification the Bush administration used both at home and abroad for attacking Iraq. While other countries that oppose the U.S. military action claim they are vindicated by the failure so far to find those weapons. They note that few Democrats are challenging Bush on the issue of forbidden weapons, preferring to put the war behind them and focus on the economy, health care, and other domestic issues. I should note for this program that Representative Dennis Kucinich was one of 126 members of the House of Representatives who voted against granting powers for George W. Bush and his administration to attack Iraq at will. I think for that, the congressman is to be highly commended. And again, we look forward to talking with him coming up in our second segment. Now, many people have claimed that the war in Iraq was mostly about oil. The administration has hotly denied that. Commentators like Fareed Zakariyyeh have hotly denied that. But if it was about weapons of mass destruction, and we haven't found any weapons of mass destruction, I'm a little puzzled at how Americans can just yawn, say, oh, well, he was a bad guy, he was killing people, and so then in the end, it's all justified. One source that I wanted to quote, a couple weeks back, a rather surprising source for this program. I think this is the time to do this. Article by Patrick J. Buchanan. Yes, conservative commentator Pat Buchanan, presidential candidate in the year 2000, sometimes angers people in the Republican Party because he speaks his mind and doesn't just basically put out the party line. This is one of those instances, and I wanted a quote from Mr. Buchanan. This was from an article posted May 7th. In his speech from the deck of the Abraham Lincoln, President Bush told the nation, with those attacks of 9/11, the terrorists and their supporters declared war on the United States, and war is what they got, i.e., the nation of Iraq was payback for the killers of September 11th. But is this the truth? For this war on Iraq was not sold to the nation as retribution for 9/11. Indeed, the ties between Iraqi intelligence and the Al-Qaeda killers turned out to be bogus war party propaganda. We were told, rather, that Saddam had gas and germ weapons and was working on nuclear weapons, and once he had them, he would use them on us or give them to Osama. Do you want to wait for a nuclear 9/11? Americans were asked. Trusting the president, believing that he had information we did not, a majority of Americans approved preemptive war. Which actually I would dispute. A majority of Americans approved preemptive war with UN backing. But again. But where now are the thousands of artillery warheads and terror weapons the President and Secretary of State told us Saddam had? We have scoured Iraq for a month. No scuds have been found. No chemical or biological weapons. No laboratories or production lines. No evidence that Iraq was building nukes or seeking fissile material. Every statement I make today is backed up by solid sources, Colin Powell told the United Nations. Were he a district attorney, Colin Powell would be under investigation today for prosecutorial incompetence or possible fraud. One British document he relied on turned out to be a 10-year-old term paper by a graduate student. The documents from Niger proving Iraq was seeking yellow cake for nuclear bombs turned out to be forgeries, and crude ones at that. Buchanan goes on for a few more paragraphs and concludes with the following. Last fall, Congress abdicated, surrendering its war-making powers to a president who demanded that Congress yield it up. If Congress wishes to redeem itself, it should unearth the truth of why we went to war. Was the official explanation the truth? Or was it political cover for an American imperial war? Now, we quoted from Molly Ivins a couple weeks back along a similar line, and I think the degree of convergence of opinion between Molly Ivins and Patrick J. Buchanan on this issue is rather startling. Well, throw us into the mix, too. We think they're both right. We think the public was sold a bill of goods about why we went to Iraq. And we're grateful for the fact that there are a few people out there, a few politicians that are willing to take issue with the administration. Among them, Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who will be joining us after a short break. I'm your host, Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. Sam.